everybody, and welcome to another episode of the IAC podcast. My name is Ohad Meislish, and today we're going to talk about one of the biggest thing out there when you talk about infrastructure as code. We're going to talk about Crossplane. And we have an amazing guest today to talk about Crossplane, one of the creators of Crossplane, Jared Watts. Hi, Jared.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me today. I was looking forward to having this conversation with you.
Of course, of course. So, Jared, tell us a little bit about yourself, about Crossplane, and how you're involved with Crossplane.
Yeah, so I'll try to short circuit some of the details about myself then so we can get to the maybe more interesting project related stuff. So I've started my career at Microsoft working on server stuff, a Windows server, and then went to go do some startups after that, focusing on storage, and then got into cloud native stuff pretty early with Kubernetes and the Cloud Native Computing Foundation. So first interesting thing there is we started a successful project around storage orchestration called Rook, matured that and got that one graduated with the CNCF, and then also started then our second CNCF project called Crossplane, which we'll be talking about today. And that kind of came out of some of the ideas from Rook and seeing how successful having storage abstractions for, file, block, object, this type of storage within Kubernetes was working pretty well. And then thinking about how to extend that idea to all sorts of different types of infrastructure beyond storage, databases, caches, clusters, buckets, all sorts of stuff like that. So, that's kind of where the ideas, the early seed ideas came from Crossplane. So we started that inside of a startup company called Upbound, and wasn't too long before we wanted to take that path again of donating it to the Cloud Native Computing Foundation, building a community around it, and being the sum of the parts of the entire community.
That's awesome. So maybe let's zoom in on that. So you started the first line of code already belonged to the CNCF, I guess not, but pretty early on you donated everything to the CNCF. And what were the first few things you've done to make this project, just to exist?
Yeah. Really good question. And I always love thinking about the history of it because, we started this back in, about 5 years ago or so. So the Crossplane project is a little bit older than 5 years. So, there's some history there, and it's exciting to think about. So, the first thing we wanted to do is that we wanted, multi-cloud was a big focus for us, right? Mm-hmm. So we wanted to be able to manage all types of infrastructure from Kubernetes and have that integrated into the control plane of Kubernetes and have control plane properties that Kubernetes brings to containerization or containerized workloads, kind of have that be applied to infrastructure as well. So the first, bit of code we were really working on with the Crossplane project was getting some resources managed by the control plane. So the first ones we were doing, we were focusing on the big cloud providers. So we were focusing on AWS, GCP, and Azure. And then we were focusing on clusters themselves. So, being able to provision, a managed...
EKS.
Yeah, exactly. EKS, AKS, GKE, and then buckets as well. So, S3 buckets and Azure blob storage, or container storage, stuff like that. And then caches.
EC2 as well. No EC2?
No, that was not one of the first segments. We were focusing on some of the, other managed services that, all that stuff was important, right? So, and we had a pretty small team. So we focused on delivering what we could to start with and then, providing some abstractions on top of that as well. So that's where we started.
Okay, so you started writing code and then very quickly you donated that to the CNCF?
Yeah, exactly. Because, we had been through the process with the Rook project before. We had, we've gotten a lot of experience with, what being part of a foundation can provide you and, the community that could build around it and the growth of the project and the maturity and all that stuff. So, we knew kind of, we started the project internally and it was, a private and closed source thing before we went public with it. But the intent was there the entire time of, we will donate this to a foundation and we will go that route with it. And so we didn't, having gone down that path already before, we were, setting up everything from the beginning of, hey, this will be public, this will be open source, this will be community, all that sort of stuff and licensing and, that kind of thing.
So let's talk about community. So you and your team start working on Crossplane. When did you start noticing that people care about the code, that people participate in one way or the other in that project?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that was actually really early on. And, you know, it was when we went public with the project. I think it was December 2018, maybe it was 2019. So I might be missing that detail. But, you know, we went public with it at a KubeCon that was in Seattle. So that can help us narrow down the year there. But so we had our first community meeting right after announcing the project. And we got folks showing up there that were interested in the idea, you know, interested in, hey, I'm using Kubernetes for my applications. But, you know, wow, how could I maybe integrate infrastructure as well, and, you know, managed services and all this cloud stuff that I'm using as well, because that's probably not going to go away anytime soon, right? I think you're probably a believer in that as well. People were interested in it right away and, you know, wanting to get involved. And so, you know, having the governance in place there so that, you know, there's well-defined roles and contribution processes and how people can get involved, you know, community meetings and, you know, maintainers and all that sort of stuff, that was fairly well-defined pretty quickly. So we saw people getting involved and making contributions fairly early on. Some of the really effective contributors ended up becoming employees as well, because they were we really wanted them full time focused on this project.
That's awesome, and I guess they loved that, because we for those who don't know, I'm heavily involved in OpenTofu, and just to see people from the community that really like and believe in what you do makes a lot of sense just to collaborate with them in a closer way. Cool. So, for those who don't really understand how Crossplane works, can you explain, if I'm using Crossplane and I have an EKS or GKE cluster that I want to provision, or an S3 bucket that I want to provision or update, how does Crossplane provision? How does it work? What do I need to do? What kind of code I need to do? What kind of installation I need to have in order to execute something that will provision these cloud resources?
I like that
question.
Where
should I start? Where should I start?
I like that question a lot, because it's like there's a million things going through my mind right now that I want to get into on that. So we might have to stage this a little bit.
Let's do it.
So yeah, so let me see. Let's sow some seeds here for something that we should get into. So, you know, there's going to be two really important layers in Crossplane. One of them is this, you know, hey, there's a control plane to manage all of your infrastructure, a similar way that Kubernetes, you know, manages your pods and secrets and config maps and deployments and all that sort of stuff. There's also controllers that are running inside Kubernetes and reconciling your desired state from a spec that represents a, you know, a real resource out there in the cloud, like an S3 bucket. And that's the controller that's running and then talking to the cloud provider to make that desired state that's in the spec actually happen in the real world and become, you know, observed state, right? So that's one layer that's really important. And then the second layer is really kind of where the magic of Crossplane starts to happen. And that's being able to build your own abstractions on top of that infrastructure. So we could talk more about, you know, how does it manage infrastructure in that detail? And then we should definitely later on get into that second layer, which is probably even more important for everybody, I think.
Let's go. Let's continue. So what do I do? Do I need to write some code in which language? Like what? I'm a developer. I've heard that Crossplane is awesome, and I have an AWS account, and I want to provision S3 bucket. What do I need to do in order, instead of manually opening the AWS GUI and clicking a button to provision S3, I want to have Crossplane to provision that. What are the first few steps I need to do?
Perfect. Yep. So yeah, that's what we'll dive into here. So first off, to just get Crossplane running, you know, the core machinery of Crossplane, that's something that's, managed by a Helm chart. So you install the Crossplane's Helm chart, and that gets like the Crossplane core pod up and running. And then, you know, that has a number of things in it, like the core composition machinery, but also a package manager as well.
Where do you recommend me? Where do you recommend me to run that Helm chart? In which Kubernetes cluster? In the something on my laptop, or something in my AWS account on the already existing EKS cluster that I have, or something else?
Yeah, for just getting started, to kick the tires sort of thing, I always recommend just a local cluster on your laptop. Like I use Kind all the time mm-hmm. to do development work and you know, testing of new features and stuff like that. So, you know, any Kubernetes conformant compliance cluster will work there. So if you just want to test it out and quick start getting started, local Kind cluster on your laptop is a great way to do that.
All right. So I have my local Kubernetes cluster and that's up and running, and I have my cross-plane Helm chart. So I installed a pod that is in charge of managing cross-plane, but I still don't have my S3 bucket. So what
yeah,
do
you
I
don't
do
have a bucket yet. So there. So sure. Then, you know, cross-plane doesn't know by itself, doesn't know anything about cloud providers or, you know, on-premises infrastructure, anything like that. So it's got an entire ecosystem of extensions that teach Crossplane about specific providers and you know, clouds and all types of infrastructure. So you would go ahead and install basically the AWS provider that teaches Crossplane all about AWS resources, and including an S3 bucket. And so that essentially gets another pod started, which is the AWS provider. And then inside of that provider are multiple controllers, one per service or one per resource in Amazon. Mm-hmm. So there will be an S3 controller that is running, and then, you know, a set of CRDs will be installed with that provider as well, that basically extend the Kubernetes API surface area to have all those new types of S3 bucket, EKS cluster, EC2, VPC, you know, all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So you've got all these things to represent all the AWS infrastructure and controllers to go and reconcile them. So you're okay. Set up there, but then what do you do? You know, what's the experience?
But before I use that, so just to clarify, in order to install a provider, or in order to use something like AWS, I need to install a provider, which actually means that I'm going to have more pods running on my Kubernetes cluster. So now I have more and more pods running on my Kubernetes cluster, and I'm ready to start provisioning. Are those pods lightweight? Like, should I be worried about the footprint of, you know, their compute and memory where it comes to my existing Kubernetes cluster? Or are those pretty, you know, idle and lightweight until it actually does something?
Yeah. So it will be a function, as you were mentioning there, it'll be a function of how much work does it have to do. You know, if you've got thousands and thousands of resources that are out there in the cloud that it's reconciling and managing and provisioning and doing all that sort of stuff, then it will certainly use, you know, you've got controllers doing that and you're doing the reconciliation. So it will use more resources from that. So I would not call a cross-plane provider exceptionally lightweight. It is certainly a consideration of, you know, you're installing this into your control plane, you know, and what do you need? So a lesson that we absolutely learned was really important to have is, the cloud providers have a ton of services. AWS has like 900
no kidding.
Or something like that, right? You know that yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And so we no longer have just one AWS provider. We actually kind of sharded them and segmented them across the various high-level services. So there's specifically a AWS provider for S3. There's another one for EC2. There's another one for EKS. So, you know, like you install basically like the surface area that you care about. So you don't have, you know, 900 controllers all running and, you know, consuming resources. Yeah. You've got a more scoped down set to what are you actually using in AWS. So that's actually really important. I'm glad you brought that up.
Okay. So this is like a more decoupled architecture to use exactly what you need. So let's say I have my AWS S3 pod running now, and I'm ready to take the next step in provisioning my S3 bucket. What do I need to do then?
Yep. And so, you know, this is still at that granular level of you're working directly with the resources themselves. So typically the path there would be, you know, just like creating a pod with like a YAML manifest to describe the pod or the deployment for, you know, a pod, if that's the path you would take. That's exactly what you're going to get for creating the S3 bucket. So there's going to be, you know, they're all all the resources that Crossplane has and its providers have are, you know, like well-behaving Kubernetes API objects. So they all have, mm-hmm. you know, spec and status, where the spec will mm-hmm. be all the desired state that you want and the configuration you want for that resource. And then the status will be, you know, the observed state of it, the conditions that it's, you know, has, is it healthy? What is mm-hmm. the on the cloud provider side actually out there in the real world? So you basically would create a YAML manifest for an S3 bucket, set the different properties on it that are important to you. You know, certainly like the name of the bucket, it would be obviously one if you want to turn on, make it public or, you know, make it like encrypted and things like that. And that would be the base, most basic experience you can have in Crossplane is a YAML manifest that declaratively describes the bucket you want Crossplane to go create in the real world for you.
And then basically I update my Kubernetes cluster with this YAML file.
Exactly. You could do like a kubectl apply of that manifest to the Kubernetes API server, and then the S3 controller would see that and go apply it. Most people, if you're on your laptop, that's what you would do. But most people are, using like a GitOps approach where they would be committing these manifests into a Git repo and then using something like Argo or Flux to sync that from the Git repo to your Kubernetes cluster, where the controllers would then pick it up and go apply it to the real world.
And the kubectl command will return once the Kubernetes cluster and the Crossplane controller is updated, it starts to execute that command, or actually when the S3 bucket is fully provisioned and I have all of the data, all of the outputs from that S3 bucket. What is the concept here?
Yeah, and I love all the questions you're asking, by the way, because you're asking about kind of like the real details of how it works that we don't normally get to get into. It's more the, conceptually, like what's the value and what's the approach.
This is the IAC podcast. We're the real thing.
So the kubectl, if you do a kubectl apply directly there of that S3 manifest, it will be accepted by the API server and return immediately. So basically it's, mm-hmm. kind of the API server has accepted this and it's committed to, yeah, exactly. And then maybe there's some mutating admission webhooks or validating admission webhooks or whatever that are checking that manifest, and maybe they could reject it before it gets committed to the API server. But yeah, it'll return as soon as it's committed there and it's, stored in the cluster in the persistent storage. And then asynchronously, as you said there, the controllers will pick that up and go start making that happen. So then the question becomes, well, how do you know what happens? How do you know the results of it, right? Because you're not getting the results from the kubectl apply command. And so just like any other Kubernetes resources, that'll be showing up in that status section that we were talking about there, and with events as well. So, status could say things like if it's healthy and, what's being observed out there, and events will tell the story of kind of the actions taken or, things that happened that are significant along the way of, hey, requests sent to AWS, this return code was given back. This is, what we're waiting on. That sort of those events can kind of tell the story of the life cycle of that bucket or that resource being provisioned. So just like any other Kubernetes resource, basically, that's how you know what's going on.
Okay, so I don't want to click a button anymore in AWS to provision my S3 buckets. So one option here, obviously, is to use Crossplane, but obviously there are other options. Let's talk about Terraform for a moment. Okay, so let's say I write Terraform code, and then I execute Terraform init plan and apply. I need to wait until the S3 bucket is provisioned, but eventually I get the S3 bucket either way. Now in Crossplane, unlike Terraform, let's say the next day, somebody somehow enters my AWS account and changes something in the S3 bucket. It causes a drift to my Terraform code, and nobody would ever tell me that there is a drift to my Terraform code because nobody ever checks what's going on in my cloud account and tries to compare that with my code unless I explicitly run some kind of service that tries to do that. Is that the same in Crossplane, or maybe thanks to the fact that you have a running Kubernetes cluster, it can help me in some way for these kind of challenges?
100%. That's exactly how that works there. So, just like in Kubernetes, if you, we're going to change the state of a resource that Kubernetes is managing, the controllers will be actively reconciling. They will, be comparing the desired state of this manifest here that you wanted this particular value, and I just observed it's different. So I'm going to take that corrective action to change that drift and back to the desired state. So exactly like you say, for you know, cloud resources. That's what the Crossplanes controllers and its providers controllers are going to be doing. If you go to the AWS console, you click on something and change it. The Crossplane controller, since they're actively reconciling the desired state with the observed state, they're going to see, hey, wait a minute, somebody changed something. This is drift. I'm going to take corrective action to get this resource in the real world out there back to what you said and the desired state of this manifest that you know, you wanted. I'm going to make that happen. So that's it should pretty much always will be correcting drift as you go along.
Which is usually what you want to have, the code as being the source of truth. I wonder if what you want sometimes is kind of a warning or an alert that, hey, check it out. I detected the drift. I didn't reconcile it yet because I wonder what you want to do. Is this something that Crossplane tries to do as well? Or you're avoiding all of that kind of discussion, just saying, hey, code is a source of truth. I'm not allowing any changes, any drifts. And you're going to start working according to these best practices and basically align accordingly. What is the approach of this technology in that regard?
Yeah, man, you asked the best questions. I love it. So there's that's a really, really good discussion we've had in Crossplane and with the community. And so something that we definitely see from folks that are have been Terraform users for years and they come to Crossplane is that they are used to that, you know, that plan apply flow where they can see, hey, this is what would change if I were to do anything right now to go forward with this. And I want to make sure that that's happened, that I understand that before any changes get made. And so in certain respects, it is a different philosophical approach of, hey, you're kind of giving control to this control plane. And you're giving it the authority to go and, you know, you tell it what you want to have happen and it will, you know, go and make those changes on your behalf and make decisions about how to do it. So in a certain sense, there is a bit of a philosophical shift there. But, you know, we definitely understand that that can be a bit scary or a bit intimidating. And so there's a number of things that we've talked about and done and taken steps on and done in Crossplane to kind of the general theme of giving you confidence that your control plane is going to do or has done the things that you're okay with. And so one example of that is a feature I'm working on right now, and it will be included in the 1.17 release. So after this podcast and this awesome conversation I'm having with you, it's back to the grind and back to code. So, you know, because there's like spectrum, confidence and trust and your platform and your control plane is a spectrum. So just one part of that spectrum, like more arguably more towards the end of the spectrum in terms of life cycle, is making sure you're understanding what the control plane has done. And so I'm doing a change log sort of feature, which is kind of like you could think of like an audit log of, hey, your control plane is doing a whole bunch of stuff. It might do something that I didn't even specifically ask for. I said, keep this value at one. Somebody went in and changed it to two. And so your control, I didn't ask the control plane to do anything else, but it went and changed it back to one. So we'll have, you know, this audit logs in Crossplane another source of building trust and confidence to see, oh, my control plane is doing these things. I should investigate that. And then there's also things of like, you know, earlier shifting that left, doing that early in the cycle of, okay, if I make this change to this particular resource, you know, what resources will that affect or what will happen out of that? That's, you know, areas of investment. There's some experience already available for that as well. So it's a whole spectrum in terms of like building trust in a control plane that's basically working.
Interesting. Like a dry run of what's expected to happen and what is the blast radius of some of the changes maybe.
Exactly. And with the different layers in Crossplane, which we kind of haven't gotten to yet about, you know, building abstractions on top of these granular resources, that becomes even more interesting of, okay, I can make a change to this abstraction. What happens underneath that with like the resources that are, you know, beneath that abstraction and what's the blast radius there?
All right. And just to clarify something I didn't ask before. So you mentioned a YAML file in which you described the resources that you want Crossplane to manage, but in the last few years we also saw some different approaches to the declarative approach, which are you know, the imperative approaches that use actual programming languages. I'm talking about something like CDK and Pulumi that allow developers that are already familiar with one language to just expand those into infrastructure provisioning. Is that something that you feel makes sense when we talk about Crossplane, or Crossplane, again, is opinionated to be closer to Kubernetes or YAML-oriented and more declarative approach?
Yeah. A really good question, because we've invested in that over the years of Crossplane as well. So I think we have a nice story that's evolved over there over time. So two ways to look at this. One way is that a nice thing about taking a control plane approach and with standardizing on the Kubernetes API specifically is that there's an API for every single resource, right? So YAML is one interface to that API. But you know, it's at the end of the day with Kubernetes, like there's all sorts of other tools that you can use to apply resources or, you know, make requests of the control plane. And it's also just a REST endpoint at the end of the day. So, you know, any tool that speaks REST or can, you know, make those API calls, you can use those as an interface instead of doing a YAML manifest. So that's one important part of, you know, there's APIs in front of this thing. So there's portability and there's, you know, a lot of different ways for integrations to happen. The second thing though, is that we started Crossplane with that no-code approach, basically, where it's, you know, a declarative YAML manifest, and that's what the experience is that you can interface with Crossplane. But since then, we've built in an entire sort of, I guess a good way to say it is like an extensible, programmable mechanism for it. So Crossplane has a concept now called functions, where, you know, if you want to go beyond, you know, just doing a declarative sort of, you know, like spec YAML sort of thing, you can use a language of your choice instead. So you can do more complicated things, you know, like flow control, like loops and conditionals and stuff like that. You can use Go, you can use Python. You know, you can use like higher level sort of things or more scripting type of sort of things. Like there's a function for Pickle, you know, Apple's configuration language. There's one for Q. There's one for KCL, Go templating, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. So we've kind of expanded the, you know, the entry points to telling Crossplane what to do. We've expanded that into all sorts of higher level languages and experiences, which has really kind of helped people have more expressiveness and flexibility and get the job done more easily.
Thanks. I think, you know, Jared, this conversation has been really helpful to understand the basic concepts of Crossplane. What is Crossplane? How it's actually provisioning cloud resources, and some opinions or, you know, approaches on how Crossplane operates and why, and what's the rationale. Before we're finishing the session today, can you share what's like the biggest thing that's being actively worked, you know, nowadays within Crossplane? What's the biggest release that we should expect in the next 6 or 12 months? What excites you, you know, currently when you work about Crossplane, and what's going to happen?
Yeah. So, you know, in the upstream Crossplane community project, we do quarterly releases. And so the next release is scheduled for just 2 weeks from now. So that'll be very quick from, you know, probably before this even airs, I suppose. But then, you know, there will be releases every quarter after that. So you can expect two more within the next 6 months, let's say. And one of the things that I'm looking particularly forward to is this concept of operational functions or day two logic in Crossplane. So one of the main focuses has been, you know, that initial provisioning and, you know, management of resources, you know, but beyond that, you know, how can you have a bit more programmability for like operational tasks? So, you know, where I was just talking about how we have the ability to write code to define your resources and to provision them and have a lot of different high-level languages and experiences there. You know, there's a concept that we're working on that, you know, I would love to see in the next 6 months for being able to write code in, you know, response to certain events. So for instance, you know, say so like a particular event happens for your database that Crossplane's managing, then we could trigger a function to run at that particular event to then go, I don't know, maybe take a backup, or, you know, maybe you could, you know, do other operational tasks like that. So this whole sort of concept of day two operational pluggability that goes beyond, you know, just the existing control plane approach and operability with other tools in the, you know, Kubernetes and cloud native ecosystem, but really makes it even more of a first class citizen to do high level and interesting day two operational tasks. That's probably the biggest thing I'm looking forward to.
Definitely.
The control sounds plane for everything.
Sounds super exciting. Jared, honestly, I feel that we can talk for days about the space and the features and the architecture and the challenges and the community. We didn't talk about monetization. So many things we can talk about when it comes to such a big and impactful project. But unfortunately, I think it's a good opportunity to kind of wrap it up for today. I really, really, really want to thank you for an insightful, story, remarkable story on Crossplane, which is a very successful project. And thank you so much for joining us today and sharing, you know, your stories about Crossplane. So thank you so much, Jared.
Thank you so much for having me. Definitely really appreciate the opportunity to speak to someone who's working on some very interesting stuff like yourself and, you know, within the OpenTofu ecosystem and everything that's going on there.
Thank you so much. All right. Have a great day, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.